Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are strapping in for what is probably the most complex and competitive sports map out there right now, the 2026 FIFA World Cup qualification status.
It's a massive puzzle.
It is. You shared with us all the definitive data on who's already in, who tragically missed out, and who is still fighting for those last few spots. And I have to say, the process has already given us some jaw-dropping historical firsts.
It really has. We've sort of hit that key moment.
Yeah.
Right now, 42 teams have stamped their ticket to what's going to be the biggest World Cup ever.
42. Okay.
So our focus today is to lay out that map of who's in and then dive headfirst into the, you know, the chaos.
Yeah.
The final six places, they're going to be decided through some incredibly intense playoff routes.
And that's the mission. We are unpacking those 42 nations, looking at the surprising geography that got some of them there, and exploring the amazing stories embedded in these sources.
Right.
And just to set the timeline, the earliest decisions came way back in March 2025, right? When Oceania wrapped up.
Exactly. And then South America finished their huge marathon of a group stage in September. So this deep dive is all about who's already in and maybe more importantly, those teams that just completely defied expectations.
Or in some cases, defied their own geography to get there.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, let's start with the biggest surprise package, because when you look at that list of qualifiers, two debutantes just jump right off the page. New flags at the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Cape Verde from Africa and Curaçao from CONCACAF.
Cape Verde getting one of Africa's nine direct spots is, you know, a huge story about the rise of West African football.
Mm-hmm.
But the Curaçao story, that completely redefines what we even think of as a national team on the world stage.
This is where it gets just fascinating. When Curaçao shows up in 2026, they will be the smallest country by a huge margin ever to play in a World Cup. We're talking about a population of around 150,000 people.
Can you just think about that scale for a second? 150,000.
Mm.
That is literally the size of a medium-sized neighborhood in a city like São Paulo.
Wait, a single neighborhood?
Yeah. You could fit the entire nation in just a few city blocks. The logistics of running a national football program from that are just mind-boggling.
And the physical size is just as staggering, right? The area is, what, 444 square kilometers?
It's smaller than the city of Rio de Janeiro.
So
their qualification isn't just an achievement, it's really an organizational miracle that's built on some very specific external factors.
Which leads to that crucial detail from the sources, the history that defines their entire squad. It says that 100% of the Curaçao team, they were all born in Holland.
That is the critical point. Curaçao was part of the Dutch Antilles until 2010. So those deep historical ties mean that while they represent this tiny Caribbean nation, the players themselves grew up in the, you know, the super competitive Dutch football system.
So this isn't a story about local talent suddenly sprouting on the island.
No, not really. It's a powerful example of how history, post-colonial ties, and migration all shape what a national team can be.
So is it a success for the small nation, or is it more of a loophole that major footballing nations can use through their historical ties?
It's both. And that's what makes it so interesting. It gives an opportunity to talent that, you know, might not make the cut for the Netherlands national team. It's a fascinating case.
And it's a perfect segue into those geographic anomalies we saw, because there are these two cases with completely opposite motivations for essentially gaming the system.
The strategy is just brilliant. Let's start with Australia. Geographically, they are smack in the middle of Oceania.
Right.
But they play their qualification matches in Asia, the AFC.
Why do that? The travel alone must be immense, and the competition is obviously tougher. It seems like it makes it harder to qualify.
Because for them, the goal isn't just to qualify, it's to be prepared when they get there.
Yeah.
The sources are really clear on this. The level of competition in Oceania is just, it's so much lower. Cruising to qualification doesn't help them at the World Cup itself.
So they are actively seeking out a harder path.
Exactly. They want tougher opponents in Asia to really test their team and tactics. They want to be battle-hardened.
Okay, and then you have the complete opposite situation with Suriname. Geographically, South American, they should be in CONMEBOL, but they play in CONCACAF.
Correct. And for Suriname, the motive is pure survival. If they stayed in that brutal CONMEBOL group with Brazil, Argentina, Uruguay,
they'd get crushed every time.
They'd be a punching bag, basically. Almost no realistic path to qualification. So by moving to CONCACAF, they face teams more at their level, and it massively boosts their chances.
And look what happened.
It worked. They've earned a spot in the final world playoff.
Okay, so let's quickly lay out that map of certainty. The 42 nations who are already in, Let's just run through the continents before we get to the chaos of the playoffs.
Let's do it. We'll start small. Yeah. Oceania had one direct spot that went to New Zealand. Done.
Hi, Zena.
South America, CONMEBOL, they got 6 direct spots. No huge surprises here. Argentina, Ecuador, Colombia, Uruguay, Brazil, and Paraguay. The usual powers.
Over in Africa, 9 direct spots, which is a big deal for the continent. We have Egypt, Senegal, South Africa, Morocco, Ivory Coast, Algeria, Tunisia, Ghana, and of course our debutantes, Cape Verde.
And in Asia, the AFC, 8 slots were filled. That includes our strategic movers, Australia alongside Japan, South Korea, Iran, and then Jordan, Uzbekistan, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia.
Now, CONCACAF is the unique one because the 3 hosts, the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, they were automatically in.
Yep, no grinding qualification process for them.
Yeah.
That left 3 direct spots open, which went to Panama, Haiti, and our big story, Curaçao.
And finally, Europe, UEFA, with 12 direct spots. This is the established order. Germany, France, England, Portugal, Spain.
Along with Croatia, Holland, Norway, Belgium, Scotland, Switzerland, and Austria.
So that's it. 42 teams. The map is set. But that leaves 6 spots to be decided by what you called high-pressure, single-elimination chaos.
And nowhere was that more clear than in Africa, even before the World Playoff. They had their own battle to decide who would represent them in that final global push.
This was the playoff final between DR Congo and Nigeria. DR Congo won it on penalties, but what happened after the match completely overshadowed the result.
Oh, it was incredible. The source material had this stunning anecdote. The Nigerian coach went public and accused the Congo technical staff of using voodoo during the penalty shootout.
You're kidding. Voodoo.
Yes, and it was a really specific accusation. He claimed an opposing staff member kept making a certain gesture while holding a bottle with some kind of mysterious liquid in it.
Wow.
Trying to, you know, psych out the Nigerian penalty takers in that critical moment.
I mean, whether you believe in that stuff or not, the result is the same. It's a brutal fact. Nigeria misses the World Cup for the 2nd time in a row.
And on the flip side, DR Congo is now trying to qualify for only its 2nd ever World Cup. The first was way back in 1974 when they were called Zaire.
So a 50-year gap they're trying to close. The stakes are just enormous.
Absolutely. And that intensity feeds right into the 2 playoff structures that will decide these last 6 spots. We should probably break those down.
Yes. The European playoff versus the World playoff.
Okay, the European playoff is its own separate thing. It's for 4 direct spots. 16 European teams are in it, usually the ones who just missed out automatically. Think of teams like Italy, Wales, Sweden, Poland.
Good names.
Big names. And the format is just ruthless. It's single game elimination, 4 separate paths, 4 winners. You lose once, you're out.
Okay, and then you have the main event, the World Playoff. This is for the last 2 spots in the entire tournament.
Right. This is a mini tournament in March 2026 that brings together 6 teams from 5 different continents. A real global mix.
And who are the 6 teams?
We have New Caledonia from Oceania, Jamaica, and our friends Suriname from CONCACAF, Bolivia from South America, DR Congo from Africa, and Iraq from Asia.
And this final showdown is all happening in Mexico, right? In Guadalajara and Monterrey.
All single game knockouts.
Okay, so let's map out the bracket for everyone listening. How does it work?
There are 2 paths. Path 1 starts with the 2 lowest ranked teams playing each other.
Mm-hmm.
New Caledonia faces Jamaica. The winner of that match then moves on to face DR Congo. And the winner of that final match in Path 1 gets a spot in the World Cup.
So DR Congo only has to play 1 game.
Exactly. And Path 2 is the same structure. The other 2 lower-ranked teams play first. Bolivia versus Suriname. The winner of that goes on to face Iraq.
And the winner of that final match gets the very last ticket to the 2026 World Cup.
That's it. And you hit on the key point. Why do DR Congo and Iraq only have to play 1 game?
That's that crucial administrative advantage. They get a bye because they are the 2 highest-ranked FIFA teams out of the 6 in the playoff.
It's a seed, basically. Their past performance, reflected in that ranking, gives them a huge logistical and, frankly, psychological edge over the teams that have to fight through that first round.
So to wrap this all up for the listener, we've gone from this tiny island nation, Curaçao, making history, to strategic movers like Australia and Suriname, to the absolute madness of the voodoo controversy. And now we land on this high-pressure playoff in Mexico for the final 2 spots.
It just shows you so clearly that qualification isn't just about what happens on the pitch. It's a high-stakes chess game of strategy, history, psychology, everything.
It really is. And that discussion about the rankings giving Iraq and DR Congo that huge advantage in the playoff, it raises a really important question for you to think about as you watch these final games unfold. When the prize is this big, how much does administrative privilege, like a FIFA ranking, actually influence the final sporting outcome?
It's a huge question. Is that leverage fair when the margins are this thin?
Something to think about as March 2026 gets closer. We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.